Welcome to House Talk on News Radio WHAM 1180. This show is a weekly conversation about all the things you should know when buying, selling, or maintaining your home. Join in with your comments or questions. Call or text 222-1180 or 800-295-1180. Now, live from the News Radio WHAM 1180 studios in downtown Rochester, here are your hosts, Jeff Schofield, Mike Reed, and Andrew Schwert.
Welcome back, folks, to House Talk, News Radio 1180. Feel free to send in your call in your questions, 222-1180. This is Jeff Schofield with RE/MAX.
I'm Justin Kiesel with All County Home Inspections, in for Mike Reed today.
I'm Jamie Messner from Premium Mortgage.
So, market's still going strong. You know, I mean, there's just not enough homes on the market. I think it's slowed down a little bit, so you're getting inspections.
Oh, yeah.
And you're doing a ton of pre-quals, pre-approvals.
Yeah, still buyers, but no
houses. We don't have homes
exactly.
To sell. You know, so I can't stress enough, if you're ever thinking about downsizing, now's the time to do it, you know.
Definitely a seller's market, but yeah, that's the limiting factor is the inventory right now.
Mm-hmm. Jamie, we were talking off air about, you know, a lot of the buyers right now, and a lot of the sellers too, you know, one and the same, but they're saying, well, I'm sitting on my mortgage. I'm not going to give up a 2.5. Somebody I talked to had a 2.25% mortgage, you know, even though now they've got another kid, they need another bedroom. They're going, well, I'm not giving that up. If you compare like a 3% mortgage, what would somebody have to do to do a buy down? You know, would it involve raising the price, seller concessions, points, you know, just to keep it on an even keel so it could get their payment down a little bit closer to what they would have had with that 3%? What are some of the options?
Yeah, so if you don't want to lower your overall purchase price limit to meet that monthly payment that you were originally quoted, a temporary buy down is an option, is a way to do that. And how that works is, yes, the buyer needs a subsidy from the seller, which equates to seller concessions. But what that would do is, let's say, just for the sake of an example, that the interest rate is 7% on whatever loan product they're looking for. And I should say that that's not necessarily the rate as of today. Interest rates are subject to many different factors. This is just for sake of example. But they wanted to get a lower monthly payment, but they still qualified at that 7% because that's important. They could receive a subsidy in the form of seller concessions from the seller to buy down their interest rate for up to 3 years, which means that they would make lower monthly payments in the first couple of years of their loan, and then it would go back up to that 7% market rate. And it's not an adjustable rate mortgage. We would be locked in at that 7%, but for the first year, they'd be paying, let's say, 5%. The second year, they'd be paying 6%, and then it would adjust to that 7 and stay at that 7 for the life of the loan.
Go back to, you know, the old phrase that every real estate professional uses, you know, you date the rate, you marry the house.
Right.
You know, you can always refinance the rate. I read a quote, I think it was by Warren Buffett, that said, don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate, then wait. You know, and I think, you know, I think it's across the country, probably the world, most, you know, wealthy people created their wealth through real estate.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, real estate is definitely the avenue for upward movement in America.
Yeah. I've, you know, we were having conversations off air, different topic here, off air about unusual things. You know, people are used to having a leaky roof. You know, they're used to having their hot water heater bust. They're used to waking up one day and it's cold. And they're like, okay, call the heating company. But, you know, what about, you know, I mean, I'll give you a great example for me. I had a house years ago, and they had a flash flood. Mm-hmm. And it, like, put a trough, you know, a wide gap right beside my house. I mean, my house was on the side of a hill, and it just, you know, and I was, like, stunned. I had no idea what to do. I go, I've never seen that before. I've been with leaky roofs. I've been without heat. But I thought, what do you do here? And so I started calling contractors and, you know, I called National Fire Adjusters to see what they would do. I didn't have flood insurance, I guess, so insurance company wasn't going to do anything. And I got quotes, I think, from $5,000 to $60,000. You know, so you just really, you know,
and
we'll get
spread
into, you know, checking contractors and stuff. Another, you know, I have a client. I had two clients, actually. One client was showing, we sold the house she had, and she said, yeah, about 10 years ago, we had a mudslide. It was a lake property. It was a lake property. Had a mudslide. I lost like 60% of my back lawn to the lake.
Okay.
And I asked her, well, what are you doing? You know, she goes, well, you know, they came in and drove these interlocking steel pylons down in, and then they backfilled it up. And, you know, so there's a lot of this stuff. Another friend had a breakwall collapse.
Okay.
And Justin, I think that's an area where you might be able to, you know, contribute to, because I think that's your specialty, isn't it? Investigating those.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm actually the only one that does it that I know of. And so what Jeff's alluding to is through all county home inspections, I developed a program to inspect and assess docks, breakwalls, bulkheads, any kind of waterfront property. So my background is actually in commercial diving. So before I became a home inspector full time, I actually did underwater welding and construction, mainly worked at nuclear power plants and naval bases and, you know, kind of anywhere where water was needed for work. And so I really enjoyed that, but you know, it was about 9 months out of the year on the road, and so I got tired of living out of a hotel room. So I committed to going into home inspections full time, and but I always have a draw for it. So I work with a engineering firm that's based out of Long Island that all they do is break walls, docks, you know, shoreline, you know, infrastructure. And with them, I developed a program to inspect our waterfront here in upstate New York. And I'll write an assessment and I'll send that over to them, and they will kind of approve it or say, no, we need more information. And all that is based off of the guidelines put forth by the Department of Highway Underwater Bridge Inspection, because I'm certified for that. So yeah, so I do a lot of those. I shouldn't say a lot, but I do a couple every year. So I've been doing that for about 3 years, and I've done about a dozen of them so far. It's just, you know, it's a hard sell, but people don't really know that they need it. But there is a lot of water in our area, for sure.
Well, when they had the elevated lake levels, when they had the elevated lake levels in the last few years, you know, a lot of places were decimated. You know, I mean, they had, you know, the state coming in to, you know, come to the rescue for a lot of the breakwalls and stuff, the erosion.
Yep.
You know, I would have thought you would have been busier during that time, but maybe it was because they feared the state was coming to the rescue.
The state, so unfortunately, we came in just after all of that, but if it happens again, that's the best way to get damage documented so that you can go to the state to say, this is what the check should look like. Because we have a cottage, my family has a cottage out in Hamlin, and so a lot of the neighbors were inundated, and so the state came around and they started cutting checks. But, you know, they want to shave off as many zeros as they can. So if you have somebody, a third party, that comes in and says, no, this is what was damaged, and this is going to need repair, and it's put on a letterhead, and it's approved by an engineer, then there's no arguing with it. So,
two things. One, I've never been invited to your cottage.
No.
I didn't even know you had a cottage, you know.
We'll have a couple sodas on the beach.
Thank you. You know, I mean, I've seen breakwalls, especially after the fact, because I think everybody that was getting their property repaired, you know, a few years ago are like, maybe it's time we move somewhere else. And so, you know, I mean, I saw a lot of them, and some of them were everything from just dumping huge boulders, you know, there.
Yeah.
Or poured concrete. You know, is that something that, like, if somebody's got a concrete foundation, should they, you know, like every 5 years have somebody come out?
That's exactly it. It's actually funny you said that. So I basically look at the structure and say, if it needs, make a determination if it needs to be repaired within 5 years, because we kind of have to gauge it within that time frame, because waterfront just fluctuates and changes so quickly that we can't say, like, you know, it's going to look like this next year. I just kind of have to say, like, in 5 years, if it continues down this road, this is what you're going to have to do. So, yeah.
So on that note, would that be someone that has a waterfront property that mm-hmm. they're, or someone's going to go in and buy one? Is that an inspection that you recommend up front, like along with just your regular home inspection?
I do. Yeah, there's a kind of a process. So like as somebody calls and says, you know, I need an inspection at this property. Okay, I'll look it up real quick. Do you want to do radon? Is there a wood burning fireplace? Do you want to have that looked at? Oh, you have waterfront. Do you want to have that looked at too? So it is something that we offer. Just not everybody takes up on it. So.
Sure.
It's not always applicable to. Like if you have just beachfront, there's nothing for me to look at. But if you have a dock, if you have a bulkhead is basically you'll see it a lot on like Edgemere where it is. Oh, I think we have. Do we have a phone call?
Yeah, we have a phone call. Okay, well let's. I think we're gonna go to a break, and then when we come back, we'll take the phone call.
Excellent.
And you can continue.
Perfect. Perfect.
So, listener, I hope you can hold on. Ask you, welcome back, everyone. Is Bill Cunningham really the great American? We take your calls at 222-1180, and we have a caller on the line. Hello, welcome to House Talk.
Oh, good. How are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm calling to see if I can get a suggestion on a house that would have a re-roof on it or versus a brand new roof. Does that devalue the cost of your house, you think, if it has a re-roof?
I would say no if it's done within the, you know, permitted guidelines. I think you're only allowed to have two roofs on. So if you slap a third on, then, yeah, you know. But I don't think, I mean, do you know the cost difference between an air 2,000 square foot ranch home.
I can't give you a number on the cost difference, but
it'll add a solid 50%.
Yeah, so a re-roof is going to be cheaper than a tear-off. If you can do a tear-off, it's always better because as the shingle manufacturers always recommend, because when you go over the existing roof layer. The shingles don't lay flat like they are designed to, so it will impact the lifespan of that new roof covering. Not a whole lot, but they will always be better if you have a tear off done first.
I would argue that return on your investment would not be there if you can put on with a second roof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a single roof right now. It's not architectural, but they're telling me I can go right over that with an architectural roof.
You could.
And I'm just debating.
Yeah, you could. I always tell people it's a cost. It's you know, you just got to do that conversation with yourself as far as cost in and what kind of value I think I'm going to get at the end of it. You know, there's a lot of questions that you kind of have to ask yourself. How long am I going to stay in the house? You know, roofing materials, you know, has it been leaking? You know, do we have to repair any kind of sheathing or anything like that? Are we going to change the venting after it's all done? So there is some variables that are going to go into each one of those roofing projects that you just kind of have to, you know, make the best cost decision.
Okay. That answers my question. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for calling. And again,
take care. Bye-bye.
222-1180 for any other callers. Jeremy, you want to go back and I don't know if you had wrapped up the underwater observation.
Oh, yeah.
Break walls.
Docks, break walls. So
docks, we didn't even hit on them.
Yeah, so I look at docks too. You know, the permanent dock structures. The ones that are kind of floating docks are the ones that kind of come in and out over winter. Those ones are you know, you don't have to really look at those because they're just setting on the bottom. So, but we look for certain things like undermining, erosion, marine growth, stuff like that that's going to impact the overall condition of the structure. So we don't have a lot of the, you know, I should say, marine issues as far as wildlife and salt water and things like that, that will degrade a structure like you would if it was on the ocean or if it was on the Sound, like in New York City or something. But, you know, we definitely do have, we have zebra mussels and we have all kinds of stuff that will still affect the underside of a dock or a break wall. And kind of the only way to look at it is to dive on it. And that's exactly what I do.
What do zebra mussels do to a dock or a break wall? Do they have an erosion effect? Or
They're mainly like a danger for people in and around. They're extremely sharp. And they can degrade wooden structures because they have, for lack of a better word, they have feet that grab onto the material, like the wood, and those feet where it grabs on is very acidic. So it will start to degrade the wood, and it will accelerate decay. So if it's not pressure treated, if it's not approved for you know this kind of application, you can get some quick degradation of the structure.
Just on break, we were talking about different areas having radon.
Mm-hmm.
And two questions I'd ask, because, I mean, in our area, people tend to think, oh, you know, Mendon's got high radon levels. So you almost always check for radon. We'll get back to that. I guess we have a caller online. Hello, welcome to House Talk.
Hey, Jeff, again, great show.
Thank you.
A minute ago, you were talking about interest rates and so on and so forth, and I believe Premium Mortgage has a product, and I think a few others do, but I'll praise Premium, about recasting. I think it's recasting, where if the rates now are at 7, and if they go down, I'm giving the highlights of it, but I was hoping your loan officer could kind of review it.
Well, she is from Premium, and Premium, I think, is the only bank lending institution in the world that does that, right?
In the world, yeah. As far as recasting, recasting would more so happen if you had like a large sum of money to put down after the fact, after you closed, and it would adjust your monthly payments and things like that. But as far as interest rates, I mean, refinancing is always an option if the rates were to go down. You know, you would still be subject to some closing costs and things like that at that point, but you're not necessarily always stuck with that rate that you lock into initially. You can always refinance as long as you qualify and so forth.
Cost to refinance isn't that high, is it?
Okay, I thought there was one there where if you were in the rate now and the rates went down, that it wasn't going to cost you as much to refinance. Am I mistaken?
No, we actually do have an initiative right now going on for if you were to refinance with us, if you bought now or within this year, rates at the way they are, and if you were to refinance by 2025, if the rates were to go then, we would waive some of the standard costs for that refi. So we would help in that sense where there would be some lender fees waived. I think some of the title fees might also be reduced, but we would just to kind of give you peace of mind in this market where you don't have to hold off. You know, we recommend you don't, you know, because prices are going to continue to go up from what we understand. But this is an incentive to kind of still get into a mortgage now. And you can always refinance within the next year or two at a reduced cost at closing.
So you can date the second rate.
You can date the second rate, yeah.
Right, right. Okay, again, earlier, Jeff, I thought that's where you were going with that type of, you know, marry the house or whatever you said. It was a good way of saying it. But, again, you could always shop if you go with Premium and within a certain period of time, and you can refinance and it won't cost you the normal cost.
Yeah, that's correct. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, that's definitely something we have going on right now through the next couple of years, actually.
It's a good move.
It is. Yeah.
Well, thank you for
calling.
Thank you. We got music. Are we going on break? August and we're all back. Tell us more about the areas that people would especially want to be concerned about radon. And then the other thing that we brought up too are termites.
Sure.
They are occasionally seen, I think only in one area, but what do you see?
Yeah. So to address the radon first, the broad brush statement is everybody should get checked for radon. Especially nowadays, my opinion is going to be that this is going to be the next big thing as far as like materials and issues with homes, because, you know, now the push is for people to be working more from home. And typically, where's everybody's offices? In the basement. And as we tighten up our houses, we improve things, we put new windows, new doors. If you have a radon issue, it lingers for longer within your house. So you absolutely should get it checked. But we do have areas around us that are notoriously high. So areas are going to be like Victor, Mendon, Pittsford, Honeyoy. And then if you go west towards like along the river, we also see higher areas over there too. But I have done a lot of them. And I've seen a lot of them also break the mold. I've found high radon in Webster. I've found high radon in the city. I name a spot, and I've found at least a high radon somewhere. Doesn't mean it's everywhere, but everybody's vulnerable to it.
And I mean, even if you were one to be proactive and you said, well, you know, because radon, there are homes that'll test negative and then a year later they'll test positive.
Absolutely.
You know, I think, I mean, we've had average homes have radon systems installed. Our clients have had radon systems installed for $1,100 to $1,500, depending upon how bad it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say the getting into it nowadays, it's about $2,500.
Has it really gone up that much?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just materials and just like everything else. So, but if you look at that $2,500 is then going to eliminate the radon completely. And, you know, radon, if you're unfamiliar, is a gas that emanates from the ground. It is, it's a radioactive particle. So it's what we call an alpha particle. And it's a very low emission of radiation, but it has an extremely long half-life. So if you were to encounter it, if you were to inhale it, it basically lives within your lungs for a really long time. And it is the leading cause of lung cancer in non-smokers. So it is absolutely a problem. And it's really easy to test for it, and it's really easy to mitigate it as well. So it really shouldn't scare anybody, but you need to be aware of it.
What makes some areas more susceptible to this radon than others?
Absolutely. It's what's underneath the ground. So because it's that alpha particle, it is the byproduct of decaying uranium. So it's all going to depend on what's underneath your feet. So those areas that I mentioned, Mendon, Pittsford, Honeyoy, what's under the ground is going to be more. If you even go back to like glacial times, there was a ton of like glacial till and like all kinds of like really hard rock that was deposited in those areas. So if you go in other areas, like closer to the lake, it's going to be more limestone, it's going to be more sand, and that's why we typically see it lower there. But it's all what's underneath your feet.
Interesting. You know what? One thing, just side note to point out with radon detection, especially now that we're coming into warmer months, if you sell your house and it's subject to a radon test, they will leave you a note to not open any basement windows, any doors, you know, and I think it's any windows in the house. I mean, they want it to be closed up, and they can tell.
I was going to say, yeah.
I've had people in August.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, they told me, you know, they picked up the test. They go, well, we just couldn't sleep at night.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's part of the process, I guess.
Our testing is pretty sensitive. We'll be able to know if you open the windows or left the house open, because it's gonna cause a lack of, you know, it's gonna cause a pressure fluctuation within the house. So our machines will pick that up.
What about termites?
Termites. So I do a lot of wood destroying organism inspections. Termites specifically, I don't see that much of. I see a lot of carpenter ants, but I don't see that many termites. So I've been doing this full time for 6 years, and last year I did 550 home inspections. So in that entire time, I've encountered one termite infestation throughout my entire career. And that was in Irondequoit over by like Seabreeze area, which I think is kind of known for having termites.
But I think in my career, that's the only area that I've ever heard of any termites ever appearing. And you know, they said when you look at a property, usually I guess you can see a kind of a white tube.
It is. It's called a mud tube. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of insects require moisture and oxygen, and so it's the same for carpenter ants, but termites are different in the sense of they create these like covered highways, and we call them mud tubes, and that's like the first giveaway for a termite infestation. Carpenter ants are going to be a little bit different. They produce what we call frass, so it's like chewed up wood, it's like bug poop, bug parts, that sort of stuff, and that will pile in certain areas where it's like their dump, you know, like their garbage heap. And that's what we're looking for when we're doing an inspection, as far as if there is or was any kind of wood destroying organism infestation.
Everybody in their home will get ants. Tell us the difference. How would you recognize a carpenter ant?
So people usually call just the little ones, like the sugar ants, you know, the really small ones. Those are not going to be destructive. The carpenter ants they're bigger, and that's kind of like the broad spectrum is they're much larger. They have their abdomen, so like their butt is like a different color. It's kind of like olive drab green. It's kind of like, you know, army green, and then like the rest of them is just black, and they have bigger heads, bigger jaws. They're just generally a larger ant.
So like the red ants that everybody gets during picnics, those are harmless.
Those are fine. Yeah, just leave those outside.
So and are the carpenter ants generally inside then?
You'll find them inside.
Okay.
Yeah. So I see them, like the damage that they cause, I see them a lot along the sill plate. So that's basically where your foundation meets the bottom of your house.
Okay.
Because they need that moisture, like I was saying. Mm. So if there is soil or if there's like mulch that gets built up around the outside of the house, that will cause moisture to increase in the framing of your house. And that kind of allows them to take hold. Mm. But if you keep it dry, then that's the first way of preventing them.
We were talking about pests a little bit, and I mean, I can go down a rabbit hole on YouTube, you know, and spend half hour looking at stuff where I realize, oh, I got to get back to work. But, you know, we don't have a lot of the dangerous stuff. We don't have poisonous snakes up here as a rule in Rochester, New York. Mm-hmm. You know, they do in the Adirondacks, I guess, in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
You know, we don't have scorpions. You know, I think we've got one poisonous spider that I've never seen and hope I never do.
Yeah, the brown recluse.
But, you know, so from your aspect, what have you seen? You know, you said that, you know, you were saying that you can tell the difference by smell of squirrels and rats mice, which I think is kind of a sick, sick thing to put on your resume. But
it's just a superpower I've picked up after doing as many as I do. But, yeah, I see a lot of, you know, rodent activity in attics and basements and kind of everywhere. Rural settings, you know, you can expect to see some mice. Cities within the city, I see a lot of squirrels because trees and overhead lines and things like that. There's a lot of avenues for them to get in. But yes, we're gonna take.
And I guess we're headed out. We'll be back soon. 222-1180. Okay, we are taking calls at 222-1180. On my computer this morning, we were just talking about what times we get up. I used to be 6:30. Now it's 5:30 because we've got a puppy, 1-year-old. But, you know, he's a little bit slow, and he still acts like a puppy, and he still gets up the crack of dawn. So now 5:30 is my new wake-up time. But so I get up, let the dogs out, and then I sit down, grab a cup of coffee, and I start checking emails. And there was one that I got. And my whole point is the scams out there now. You're out of cloud storage.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm looking at it going, am I? And I start looking at it, and it's, you know, I go, there's some flaws in the website, the email, the presentation.
Yeah.
You know, like I clicked on it, I look at it, and I go, well, it's from Google. Google's the one that mandated that your website's going to be blacklisted if you don't have it mobile friendly. So I'm going, we've gone over that before, but some of the ones connected with real estate, good one, wire fraud. I mean, wiring money for down payment. Somebody, we'll send us your link. So a lot of people are ripped off by wire frauds. You know, it was interesting. Years ago, I bought something from overseas, a watch from overseas, and it took like 3 months, or three weeks for the wire to go through.
Oh, wow.
And they said, well, it's not like you see in the movies. You know, it doesn't happen instantaneously. So at RE/MAX Plus, we don't accept wire deposits. You know, they have to go to an attorney, and then the attorney will transfer it over. One of the other ones that's been rampant all over, but especially we've seen it in our area, is that, the bad guys will come in and what we call scrape. They'll copy pictures off a house that, a real estate agent has for sale.
Yeah.
That's
and then
big.
They'll post it on Craigslist.
That's right.
And, I'd ask the average, person looking to rent a home, don't be stupid.
Yeah.
Don't send them money and going, it's great. I love the pictures. Here, send us the first month's rent and the first month's deposit, and, we'll send you the keys. But there was a time where, I had a house. It had just, it was closing the next day. And so, I went over there, and the seller said, look, I can't, get the keys to closing. So we left it in the mailbox, which normally I don't like to do. I'll swap out to a combination lockbox, so the buyer can get in after closing. We'll give them the combination. And then I got a call from somebody going, hey, we need to get keys. We saw you had this listed, but the owner rented it to us.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, my God. So I hurried over there to get the keys out of the mailbox just in case they, thought I was not telling them the truth. Because once they move in, I think then you actually have to have them evicted.
I think so.
Be leery of that. If you put a house up on the market, you might want to actually periodically check Craigslist rentals.
I did a home inspection at a property that had happened to about a year ago, and one of the deals, this was the second go around, I think. So I was there after a deal had fallen through because that had happened. Somebody came in and was like, oh, this was being rented to somebody else. And so, it fell through for whatever reason. Probably somebody just backed out. But I haven't heard of it happening as much lately, but I absolutely know it does happen.
I just got a text from Melanie saying she dumped a sentence because she thought I swore. I think it's kind of amazing that I've made it this many shows without. Contractors, the scams with contractors, you always hear about them. You always hear about somebody getting indicted, contractors, plow people. I'm consistently looking for new ways to advertise. Where can I get to, 10 more websites that I'm currently not on? And one of the things I do is when I'm ready to hire a company, I always ask for referrals.
Mm-hmm.
I Google the company. And, for contractors, I mean, that's a big thing every year. You go with a referral, that's the best way. And then, somebody that we've used and had success with, check them out on Angie's List. I mean, what's Angie's List? $50 for a year?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do a $30,000 remodel job, that extra $50 is probably worthwhile.
Yeah. We're kind of finding that's what, as home inspectors, we're kind of falling into that position of we are a good referral base as well as a checkup system. So like if you have a contractor that is coming into doing work, We are able to come in afterwards and say, you know, we'll parse out like the contract that you have developed and say, okay, yes, they're using the correct materials. Yes, they're using the correct techniques. So everything looks good. Or we can say they were supposed to put an underlayment on this floor. There is no underlayment. And that has actually happened in the past. And while on site, we've told the contractor to remove all the flooring that's already been installed, and it all has to get redone. So we can be the acknowledgement of what you already think is happening, or the gap of knowledge can be closed for you to say, like, this is, they're not doing what you're paying them to do. So we do that quite a bit as of right now.
One of the things that, you know, I mean, this is a very controversial point among agents across the nation, is pocket listings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, an agent loves it because they've got a house that nobody has access to, and the seller might go, hey, you bring me a buyer, I'll sell it, but I don't want to put it on the market. And, I mean, I had a case in the past year where somebody was, you know, they'd come to a private sale. And, you know, the daughter-in-law got involved and said, you know, I think they're selling it for too little. And, I mean, this was under $200,000. And I said, well, I haven't seen the house, but I can't imagine that it would only sell for that price. You know, again, I haven't said it, and I've said that before probably and been wrong. But I ended up looking at it. We put it on the market, delayed negotiation. They sold for $80,000 more than what they were going to, you know, sell without putting it on the market. And if I had done a pocket listing, it would have been just similar. You know, I would have had somebody. In a pocket listing, in my opinion, the only person that benefits is the agent. You know, the seller might benefit, but with delayed negotiations, mm-hmm. they only have to be tortured for a week. I mean, my average time on the market right now is 6 or 7 days. And I think we're done for the week. Look forward to having everybody back next week. And this is Jeff Schofield, RE/MAX Plus, 600-5333.
Justin with All County Home Inspections.
Jamie with Premium Mortgage.